Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Your fault. They treated me like I was a cyber. Like I did it to myself. And like nothing I said could be believed.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
True story this. When I was a child, I was sent to a dentist who was a rogue dentist. Yeah, went around filling the teeth unnecessarily of every child he came across. And then it turns out he had a bit of a problem with the old snifferoonie, cokehead with respect. And that taught me early on that just because somebody is wearing a white coat and presents as a medical expert doesn't actually mean that they're trustworthy. And this is going to get validated further by the case I'm covering today of James Craig, to all intents and purposes, a successful dentist, but beneath that lovely, shiny exterior lays something altogether malevolent. Let's talk about the fact that Angela Craig was a woman who should have been able to trust the man that she was married to. But then all of a sudden, she presents to hospital in Aurora, Colorado with this mystery illness, shall we say. Now, at that point, no doctor could comprehend what was going on. In fact, it wasn't until she really sadly died that the disturbing truth came out. This case is chilling beyond belief because yet again, it speaks of just the most tragic truth that the very people in our lives that we're going to be able to trust more than anybody else are often those responsible for our demise. Let's talk about James Tolliver Craig. He was born on the 11th of February, 1978. He was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the LDS family, essentially. So should have been a very religious guy with good morals, and apparently, he carried his faith into adulthood, eventually becoming an elder in his church, which is really ironic when we go through the details of this case. He was actually an elder of his church in Colorado. He earned a Bachelor of Science in Zoology from Brigham Young University. Then he actually went on to get his Doctor of Dental Surgery degree from the University of Missouri, Kansas City in 2006. So we can absolutely say he's a bright button, is somebody who's thrived intellectually and academically. Now, early in his career, he actually served as an assistant professor at UMKC's dental school. He taught clinical dentistry. He also helped dentists who trained in other countries become licensed in the US. So he is doing really well. He is exceeding, no doubt, at his age in his field. And this should bode really well in his future because let's be clear, when it comes down to this kind of path, he's on the trajectory to do incredibly well. Also, let's just bring in the fact that on a psychological level, psychopaths do find themselves going to fields like medicine and dentistry because they're kind of calm under pressure. But unfortunately, they bring with those antisocial traits a whole heap of problems at the same point. But that doesn't mean that they can't succeed when they put their minds to it in certain environments and areas. And in later years, he contributed to research on bone substitute materials. So that's things like bovine, which is what you'll use in dental implants when people have to build the bone up and you haven't got enough bone in your own mouth. So he's really the leadership of his field. He was a member of numerous dental associations. So nothing untoward to see here in those early years, apparently. Now, in 2009, Craig settles in Aurora, Colorado, and he founded Summerbrook Dental Group. And with respect to him, he built a 14-year career as a general and a cosmetic dentist. So certainly bringing in the cash without a doubt. Dr. Craig, as he was known by his clients and his staff, was absolutely adored. Literally adored. Now, I'm going to tell you why he was adored. He used to hand out freshly baked cookies at appointments. And I have a juxtaposition when I describe that in my mind because I'm going, I would go to that dentist. You can definitely bribe me with food. If anybody wants to get into my heart, you can just give me something for my belly. So I would be there at that dentist going, give me those freshly baked cookies. I used to book into a hotel specifically because when I arrived at the desk, they would give me a warm cookie. The fact I could have bought 25 packs of cookies for the extra price I paid didn't bother me. It was just the luxury of getting one of those cookies that meant I booked with them every time. But at the same point, I'm thinking, he's a dentist. He's meant to teach us against the error of our ways where sugar is concerned. So we could add in, maybe there is just that manipulative side to his nature. Not that I'm saying that if any of you go around your neighbourhood being kind and giving out cookies that you're manipulative. Although you kind of are, because you want people to see that you're nice. I'd be the kind of person who'd do that too, so don't worry. Now, outside of work, he volunteered at a local food bank. He participated in an anti-bullying programme with Denver Police. So certainly, we're not seeing many antisocial traits at this moment in time. And friends literally described him as kind and apparently utterly devoted to his wife and children, which is strange considering the case I'm going to discuss today. Stephen Tubbs, who was a local radio host and former patient of Craig's, described him literally as a total family man. And like I said, that begs the question, how does this total family man become a murderer? And I suppose it's because psychopaths compartmentalise all the time, don't they? Nobody is a psychopathic murderer 100% of the time. That'd be too obvious. And 95% of the time, they're decent human beings that we like, that fit into our societies, that compartmentalise their feelings and their actions behind that mask and can carry on seemingly without alerting any of us to the true monster behind that mask. Because the truth is, behind that shiny, kind, totally devoted exterior, serious cracks had formed in Craig's life. First of all, money is a problem. So he struggled with financial instability. He was described as a risk taker. Even he personally described himself as a risk taker. And some people take risks and are rewarded. Others take risks because they like the way it feels. Others take risks because they don't have the nuance of our emotional vocabulary and they need big deals to make them feel anything. That would be the psychopathic side of somebody's nature. And the thing about risk taking is, if you've got millions and millions to blow, maybe you can make a few deals that go wrong. But if you've got a family and you're in charge of making sure that that family is safe financially, then being a risk taker is not positive on the whole when you're doing it in a way that can really destabilize your life. Now, his friend and also his business partner, Dr. Ryan Redfern, said Craig made risky business bets that drove the dental practice deep into debt by the early 2020s. Now, let's bear in mind the fact that in America, dentistry is pretty expensive, particularly cosmetic dentistry. It's expensive in the UK where I live, but it's absolutely outlandishly expensive in the States compared to the UK. So to have had that really successful dental practice for a period of years and then to literally ruin it into debt, that speaks of somebody who really isn't stable when it comes down to their financial decisions and also isn't thinking consequentially nature-wise. Now, Craig ends up filing for bankruptcy in 2021. He was actually verging again on insolvency by 2023. So this guy ain't learning again. What does that remind you of? Somebody who makes risky decisions, doesn't think about anybody else's feelings and needs, gets themselves into trouble, doesn't learn, and then gets themselves into trouble again. This repeat offender by nature, because all he's thinking about is himself. It's an egocentric mindset. And again, it speaks to those psychopathic traits that exist within certain human beings. Now, Redfern, the partner in the firm, ended up buying Summerbrook Dental from Craig in August 2022. He wanted to bail the practice out and he even goes ahead and keeps him on as an employee dentist. So it basically saves the day for him. So let's now look at Angela Craig, our victim in this case. So she was born Angela Dawn Prey and she was born on the 15th of April 1979 in Dodge City, Kansas. She was the youngest of 10 children. So she came from a large Latter-day Saints family. And it was joked in the family that as a baby, the family, she was the favourite child. I don't think that can feel real for kids who are the youngest, because I think that everybody's just so attentive to them because they know that that's going to be the last child and all the older siblings want to play with the child and want to be around the child. And so it can feel, even though they're loved equally, that they are the favourite child. And those who knew Angela best said that she was literally the type of person who lit up every single room that she went into. She was just considered this really selfless human being. She was really super kind and compassionate. For example, in July 2022, a close friend, Jennifer Davis, she was hospitalised and she said Angela stopped by to cheer her up. She had colouring books, she had silly gifts and she said she was always there for you. She was literally a beacon of light when you were having a dark day. She said one of the things about her nature was that she had this large capacity to forgive and a truly generous heart, which in typical relationships is a positive thing, right? Because let's be clear, we're in long-term partnerships at points where our partner is annoying us a great deal and we require forgiveness in our hearts so that we do not leave them. She is clearly somebody who has this depth of feeling for the people that she loves, and whilst that's wonderful on one level, of course, it can lead to people being exploited, because if you're deeply forgiving, particularly when people don't deserve that forgiveness, you can essentially have a fracture in your foundation where people will use that against you. And I genuinely feel that this beautiful trait is something that will be used as a battering ram against her emotionally and psychologically. She was very religious, so she served actively in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She was a choir director, she was a youth group leader, and apparently her favorite role was a genealogy and family history consultant. And she basically helped other people to trace their ancestry, which is a burgeoning new opportunity for people. And it takes a lot of diligence and a lot of work to do those things. And she obviously likes bringing people together. That's why she'd want to do that particular exercise within her work. Angela was said to adore the outdoors. She loved camping, hiking. She loved being in nature. She sounds like the very best of people, doesn't she? She was also really creative, so she was excellent at woodworking. She was great at DIY. This is where somebody like myself would fail massively. I can't even put together a flat pack wardrobe. I once built a chair, and when my husband looked at it, he said, "That's great, apart from you've done it backwards." So I just leave that to the individuals who can read instructions. Above everything else, though, Angela absolutely loved her family. She was totally devoted to them. She is the perfect wife, the perfect mother. Now, she meets Craig in the late 90s, and this is because they're both moving in their LDS church circles. She's 20, he was 21, and apparently they quickly fell in love. And one of the things that I think people might not be aware of, if you're not aware of the Latter-day Saints, is that it's very normal for people to get involved and married quickly, because there's religious rigor and having sex before marriage is a problem, and marriage is basically considered the most important area of continuing the religion and having babies within that religion. So it's quite typical to get married young and to have children young as well. So 18th of December 1999, they get married and they had six children together. So two sons and four daughters. They were all born between 2000 and 2013. Now, Craig actually once wrote of his family, "They all enjoy the outdoors, camping, snowboarding, fishing, hiking, rock climbing." And apparently they were very frequent visitors to Disney. All that's going to come at a price. I mean, that's an expensive habit to have, the things that have been listed. So he obviously enjoys flashing his cash and also giving his children experiences. Some can see that again as just being a devoted father. Some can also see that as being unrealistic with their money and not necessarily thinking ahead to the future and being seen to be the best dad in the world. Now, if you've got some narcissistic traits, even though you will always think of yourself first, you don't half like it when people positively stroke your ego, because you've got that deep insecurity at heart. And it's likely that he liked being seen in the pictures and photographs and in the sports as this super successful parent. Now, one of the things that Angela did was she often helped out at Craig's dental practice whenever she was needed. And he also did credit her with being this really supportive partner in business, which she was. Bear in mind, she will have been certainly part of the legs of the business, but I doubt she would have been involved in the finances of the business. I would imagine that he would have kept the finances secret from her. Now, patients who visited Summerbrook Dental Office, they said they often saw her there. It wasn't uncommon for her to even bring the kids there as well, because obviously she was a devoted mother, so she was looking after the children, so sometimes they'd be present. And to neighbours and friends, the Craigs appeared this uber normal family, I suppose, this successful American dream when it comes down to it. But just as there are cracks in the finances where James Craig is concerned, his marriage also has cracks. So they've been married 23 years at this point and it is crumbling. And according to Angela's family, the problems did begin relatively early and then just escalate over time. And she actually confided to her sister, Toni Covered, that Craig had developed this dark side, Apparently, he was obsessed with pornography. He had multiple extramarital affairs, which is absolutely blindsiding and devastating for Angela. She's deeply committed to her vows. She's deeply committed to her faith. And to some degree, when you are that deeply devoted to an idea, to your faith as well, but to the idea of marriage and commitment, and you believe this is overarching God who potentially will judge you for your actions, that can be absolutely solidifying in your life and wonderful in your life. It can also form a prison because you create these walls where you feel if you dare to walk through the door that could be within one of those walls, you'll have failed. And I think that to some degree, Angela is imprisoned with that mentality because she thinks about what will happen if she removes herself from the marriage. Will she have failed her commitment? And so even though he's being unspeakably cruel to her, as far as I'm concerned, she's trying desperately to forgive him. She wants to keep the family intact. And Tony, her sister, actually later testified that Angela had even found really disturbing evidence that Craig had tried to drug her in the past. Now imagine living under the same roof as somebody that you can see is being predatorial towards you, because you would think to yourself, why is he trying to drug me? Is he trying to drug me because he wants to do inappropriate things to me when I'm unconscious? Does he want to film me? What does he want to do? Or does he want to kill me? They would all be questions in your mind. And what's going on that this is continuing? Because it suggests that they're not having these conversations. She isn't confronting him at this moment in time. Maybe that's because she's really scared. Maybe that's because she wants to believe there's a reasonable explanation for it. Maybe she just wants to live in denial. But to know that that's happening, that must have been absolutely devastating for her. Now, over time, she just gets to a point where she confronts him finally. And he says, literally, this is because I was planning to kill myself and I didn't want you to stop me. Sorry? Yes. You found these drugs. You're right. I can't deny it. I have been thinking of drugging you. Why? Well, it's because I've decided that I don't want to be here anymore. Right, okay, but why are you drugging me? Well, I just think to myself, you might want to stop me because you're a devoted wife and mother and you love me and you don't want me to die. Well, I mean, I wouldn't want you to do any of those things, but why are you drugging me? Well, because of the fact that I don't want you to stop me doing it. But why would I stop you doing it if I didn't know you were going to do it? Well, I mean, that's a good point, but I'm just saying you might have realised I was going to do it, even though I hadn't told you I was going to do it. And even though I could go somewhere completely different and distinct from our own home, so you wouldn't actually know where I was to do it, I could do all of those things. But instead, I thought I'd just do it in the comfort of my own home by drugging you first. Okay, just going to walk away now, because none of that makes sense. But you can understand that he's just trying to play the emotional blackmail card. Oh, I'm so depressed. Feel sorry for me. The fact that I've done something really alarming is irrelevant now because you're going to be concerned about my mental health. That's so manipulative and dark. Don't get me wrong. Craig had struggled with depression before. He had attended some counselling in the past. So you can imagine that this woman, Angela, with this love in her heart, this devotion and compassion within her nature, she's going to think to herself, please just let him get well. Maybe he can heal. Maybe he can change. And she even urged him to join her in marriage and spiritual counseling. So she is absolutely committed to this relationship, in spite of that being a detriment to herself. So many people in relationships, they always believe in the best of their partner. And I always say, see their worst actions and judge them accordingly. We can all be good. Many points in our life can be filled with goodness, but it's our darkness that people should judge us on. Because the reality is, if they can do things that are absolutely outlandish in comparison to your own actions, it's because they have that capacity. But she is somebody who believes that he can change. She's somebody who is committed to this relationship. And to some degree, that's her undoing. Now, her private journals and her messages literally revealed that mindset. This woman who continued to fight for her marriage, fight to get him better and fight for her kids. That's exactly what Detective Bobby Olsen said about her. And because of that, she just endures years and years of gaslighting and manipulation. Now, by early 2023, the way I would describe their marriage is it's just hanging by a thread at this point. So Craig's financial troubles had become really dangerous. Angela did at this point know about the bankruptcy. She knew about the money issues, but there's a level of powerlessness within that knowledge. And she's confiding to her sister that Craig had actually gone ahead and lost a further $2,000 gambling during a Las Vegas trip. If my husband did that when we were in debt, I would say, stay in Las Vegas. You're gonna have to get a job as some kind of pole dancer to make that cash back before you come home and walk through my door. Because it is just so devastating when you're financially crippled and somebody is crippling you further. It is really stressful, particularly if you've got children, you've got bills to pay, and it's just a selfishness level that is unspeakable for the person who's having to deal with it. And I appreciate there will be people saying, well, the reality is that people have gambling addiction. I get it. If you got kids, you don't have a right to that addiction. Sort it out. Stop spending the money. It's not like you're addicted to heroin when you're in a scenario where that hit after hit is required, because otherwise you might even be in danger life-wise because your body's got so used to it. There's a very simple rule to stopping gambling. Just don't play the games. Don't go to the casinos. And I know it might be a challenge, but it's not like chemically you're going to have some devastating hit because of you not doing that. And it really bothers me when people go ahead and spend their family's savings and have no consideration for the impact on their children, as is the case for most addictions. I can have sympathy and empathy for the person experiencing it, but I feel far more sorry for those people who are being impacted by those choices. Now, the couple end up having to mortgage their dream home just to keep that dental office afloat. So she's basically had everything tied up and affected by his actions. Now, bear in mind, does this do anything to make him think to himself, wow, aren't I lucky? I have this incredible partner who supports me and unconditionally loves me in spite of my horrendous indiscretions. No, he just carries on having extramarital affairs. So we get to January 2023, and at this point, Angela ends up agreeing to a brief separation because I imagine she needs space, and I also imagine she needs to just take stock. Craig ends up moving into the spare bedroom, but they are living in the same house. This is very typical of modern day separations. It's really expensive to separate. It's quite scary dealing with all the money. So often, particularly if you've got children, you think to yourself, well, we'll try and cohabit whilst we figure things out. Now, around this time, Craig tells Ryan Redfern, the guy he shares the clinic with, that he's been cheating and that he wants to think about potentially getting a divorce. But he also tells him Angela is vehemently against this idea because they've been married in the sight of God and she's really religious and this is a lifelong commitment. Let's think about the phrase, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. Now we get to late February 2023 and Craig actually travels to a dental convention. This is in Las Vegas. And here, unsurprisingly, when you think about the mindset and motivation of this man, he happens to meet a 49-year-old Texas orthodontist named Dr. Karen Kane. How convenient. An extramarital affair, potentially with some money attached. No disrespect to Dr. Karen Kane. At the end of the day, she will just be meeting a guy, thinking that he's a nice guy, thinking that he's a professional equivalent, but he's obviously thinking about potential exit strategies from his relationship, and somebody with a lot of cash, it's going to be helpful for him, isn't it? Now, Karen at this point is also going through her own divorce. So Craig tells her that he and Angela are separated. So she's like, we are so similar. There is this synergy. Look at the things we do. We share the same mentality professionally. And we're both going through the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune when it comes down to our own divorces. And that creates connection. Shared space, similar experiences creates connection. And this is where this intense long-distance relationship begins with Karen. So they start exchanging flirty texts. They're phoning each other every day. Bear in mind, she thinks he's separated fully, as in it's a done deal. He's gushing to Karen that meeting her was this fate and just discussing the future together. Bear in mind, not telling anyone else about the relationship. It's such a great relationship. We've got this amazing future together. It's going to be fantastic. I'm just not going to tell anybody about it, which is the opposite of what we do when we meet somebody. When we meet somebody, we're like, when is it okay to tell the whole world? When is it okay to literally tell everybody I know and everybody that I haven't known for a while, but once I knew, and everybody that I went to primary school who didn't think I'd ever meet anybody of any real worth? When do I get to tell them all immediately? Is it now that I've met somebody that I really like? I know it's only date two, but I do think this is going to be my husband. You know, that is how we are. Now, even in early March 2023, this is when Angela starts getting sick, Craig flies Karen to Colorado from March the 8th to the 10th, 2023. And he is spending time with his mistress, not that she knows that she's his mistress, whilst his wife is hospitalized. Like I said earlier on, what do psychopaths do really effectively? They compartmentalize. So they can do a range of different diabolical things whilst appearing to the rest of the world to be perfectly normal. Also, Karen and him went ahead and had dinner together twice during her visit, so he's in the public domain. Karen did say that on reflection, he seemed quite stressed and quite anxious during the dates, but she just thought, listen, he's going through a divorce situation, he's got a lot of work pressures, and she could relate to that, so she put it down to those issues. In reality, his wife is fighting for her life in a hospital bed whilst Craig is whining and dining his mistress. Now, as I said, Angela starts to get ill, and this happens ironically in late February 2023. And what happened at that point? Yeah, that's when he meets Karen. And these issues that she's facing on a health level, they're really complex, they're really puzzling. Now, initially, it seems like she has the flu. She's really dizzy, she's lightheaded, she's really fatigued. And I think it's one of those annoying things that people will say very regularly in conversations, I've got the flu. And you look at them and you're like, if you had the flu, you would not be talking to me. You'd be in bed, unable to get out of bed. You have a cold. A flu is dreadful. Anybody who's actually suffered genuinely from the flu, you can end up hospitalized, you can end up near death, as I did in the year 2000, literally in hospital for 3 weeks, didn't think I was gonna make it. At the end of the day, the flu can kill you. So she's not well at all. She is really feeling under the weather on a range of levels, and she doesn't know what it is. But then we get to the 6th of March, 2023, and she feels really sick. She gets violently ill, and this is after a workout, and Angela's condition worsens the same day. This is when she's taken to Parker Adventist Hospital in Denver. At this point, the doctors evaluated her for a possible neurological metabolic problem, and she gets treated. She gets released the same day because her symptoms do stabilize. So there's no definitive diagnosis made, but they're troubled by this because it seems very left field on a health level for her. She is a fit woman, and it seems to have come and hit her out of the blue. 3 days later, this is on March the 9th, she falls ill again. She goes back to Parker Adventist Hospital. Now this time, she's really dehydrated. She's incredibly disorientated, and the doctors actually admit her for inpatient care. So she remains at this point hospitalized from the 9th of March to the 14th of March, and they're just carrying out lots of different tests. And they're looking at her and thinking, what could this be? And the most likely candidate they come to terms with is the idea that it's consistent with a toxic gastrointestinal insult. So she suffered intense vomiting, abdominal pain, dizziness. And when they did the standard toxicology screens, it didn't immediately reveal a cause. Now, bear in mind, throughout this horrendous ordeal, it's terrifying for her. Craig remains in close contact, both with Angela's family and friends, to let them know and update them on her condition, because everyone's understandably incredibly worried about her. She's a wonderful human being. They want to know what on earth is going on with her health and well-being. So in a text on the 9th of March, this is as Angela is literally lying in a hospital bed, Craig writes to a friend about her illness and writes, "If it wasn't my wife, this would be kind of a fun puzzle to work out," said no concerned husband in the history of concerned husbands. I'm just gonna throw it out there that if my husband was in hospital, and last year my husband did end up in hospital with a condition of his heart. We thought he potentially was on his way out. He was removing his mortal coil. We had previously, the night before, been to a friend's home where we had been given, shall we say, a lot of port. Maybe I thought at that point it could have been some kind of gout response because we were drinking something from the 1840s. But it turned out he had this kind of impact on his heart that was an infection around it, and it was very, very painful. And during that period of time, I can tell you I have a very dark sense of humour. At no point was I going, oh, you know what, this would be a great puzzle to solve if it wasn't my husband who was in hospital with a potentially life-threatening issue. No, I'm texting people going, I don't know, we're just going to make him well, blah, blah, blah. That's what you do. You're not sitting there going, oh, objectively, if my wife wasn't potentially super sick in hospital, I'd be thinking, let's go on a bit of a journey of adventure. Let's have a veritable detective experience with the potential issues that she may be facing on a physiological level. That's not normal at all. And clearly, the person receiving that message is going to be thinking, that's not normal at all. Now, that week, staff at the dental office noticed what can only be described as very peculiar behaviour from Craig. So on the evening of the 6th of March, the night of Angela's first hospital visit, an officer manager named Caitlin Romero, and I love Caitlin Romero, I really do. There is just something about her that is deeply inquisitive and suspicious. So she sees him return to the closed dentist after hours and the lights are off. And she's like, that's not normal. Why would you have the lights off? If you go back to the place of work, why would you not have the lights on? First of all, let's be honest, nobody likes the dark, really, do we? You only like the dark if you're under your covers, snuggling up with a hot water bottle and somebody you know is with you so that you feel really super safe and you know all the doors are locked. Other than that, the lights are on, aren't they? When you get up in the middle of the night, you put the lights on, you're like, just in case there are monsters on the bed. It's just that psychology of being a child and growing up and carrying those kind of nightmares with you. But the lights are off. And Craig is literally hunched over a computer in one of the exam rooms. And it's not his private office, so he's choosing to use potentially a different computer because he doesn't want people to link him to it. So Caitlin thinks this is really weird. First of all, he's got his own laptop. And then after about 30 minutes after he leaves, he texts her and says, I'm going to be receiving a personal package at the office. And he says, don't open it. So she's like, there's something really creepy going on. The guy has literally been hunched over somebody else's computer. Now he's texting me saying there's a package coming, but I mustn't open it. 1 week later, on Monday the 13th of March, that package arrived at the dentist while Craig's out. Now, at this point, it's actually a different employee. Obviously, that employee hadn't been given any warning at this point. She goes ahead, opens the box, and it contains a bottle labelled potassium cyanide with a biohazard symbol. Just bear that in mind. Potassium cyanide, one of the most lethal poisons that any of us can even imagine. Literally with that biohazard symbol on it to tell people this is incredibly dangerous. And fortunately, in spite of the fact that Caitlin had been advised don't open any of his personal packages, because this other member of staff hadn't got that memo, they go ahead and open it. And at this point, Caitlin thinks, that's the package Craig mentioned. She reseals the box, she sets it aside. And then, when she hears that Angela's back in hospital on the 15th of March with these really mysterious symptoms, she decides she's going to Google cyanide poisoning symptoms. Don't we all?
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Love this woman. Isn't this woman the kind of human being that we require in the world? Because she's like, I am not comfortable with what I've seen, and I'm not going to let it lie. In spite of the fact that I work at this practice, I am fearful that something terrible could be happening to Angela, and I need to know if that's possible. She finds out, guess what? They absolutely match Angela's symptoms. She immediately reports what she'd seen. First, she calls another office manager, Jacqueline Calderon, on the 15th of March, and basically tells her the discovery, the theory that Angela's been poisoned. Now, understandably, if she has been poisoned by cyanide, the prognosis is very poor anyway, but you would need to know about it as a doctor so you can do some intervention if it's possible. Now, Angela's condition does temporarily improve enough. She ends up getting sent home. This is on the 14th of March. This is after 6 days in that hospital. And bear in mind, she's not had any diagnosis at this point. Now, the next morning, this is around 11 a.m. on the 15th of March, 2023. Angela collapses again at home. This time she's got a headache. She's really dizzy. She's slurring her words. Unfortunately, Angela's brother, Mark Prey, he was actually visiting. He'd come to town, and so therefore he was available to her. So he takes her to University of Colorado's Anschutz Hospital in Aurora. By the time that he gets her there, a lot of time hasn't passed, but she's barely able to walk. This is her third hospitalization in 10 days. And within a couple of hours, Angela's condition worsens. Now at 2 p.m. on the 15th of March, she suffers a seizure in the ICU. Doctors at this point are running emergency tests, and her heart rate and her blood pressure plummet. She loses consciousness. So medical staff have to place her on a ventilator and life support just to stabilize her. And then a doctor delivers the most horrendous news to the family, which is that Angela's brain isn't responsive. And they also explain to the family that at this point, they don't have an explanation. They can't find any natural medical condition to explain such a rapid decline in this otherwise really healthy 43-year-old woman. Now, as Angela's condition worsens, Craig is playing the role of the distraught husband. In a group chat, he writes, "She crashed, intubated. Doc says she's very, very worried." Now, one of the people in the group chat was Michelle Redfern, the wife of Craig's business partner, Ryan, and also a close friend who happened to be a nursing professor. Now, she's really alarmed by this. So Ryan and Michelle, they drive to Anschutz Hospital to support him. But on their way, guess what happens? Ryan gets this urgent telephone call. At 3:30 p.m. on the 15th of March, Jacqueline from the dental officer relays what Caitlin Romeo had discovered about the cyanide package. So you can imagine psychologically where they are. They're literally on the way to support their friend, the person that Ryan works with, and also their mutual friend through his marriage. And they're really worried about Angela. And as they are traveling, literally, to support this man, who may be soon a grieving husband, they get the call. There's a really strong likelihood that he is her killer to be. What do you do in that moment? How do you feel in that second when you realise the person that you thought you could trust is as far away from that reality as you could have ever comprehended? Angela never actually regained consciousness. She lingered, I suppose you would use that word, on life support for more than 3 days. By the 18th of March 2023, doctors determined she was medically brain dead. Her family had to make the horrific decision to withdraw her life support. And Angela really sadly died that afternoon. This is a lovely woman, compassionate, kind, devoted, a devoted parent. And now she's dead, 43 years of age. No explanation at that moment. But of course, these things tend to come out, don't they? No matter how clever you feel you are as a killer. And the toxicology tests and an autopsy are done by the Arapahoe County Coroner's Office. And at this point, the true cause of Angela's death is confirmed. The coroner, Dr. Mark Simon, found, as we would expect, lethal concentrations of cyanide in Angela's blood, as well as significant levels of tetrahydrozoline. That's a chemical found in over-the-counter eye drops. She also had these really abnormally high levels of arsenic in her system. So this was a combination poisoning, but it's a combination poisoning that tells an absolutely clear story that she had been intentionally murdered. Now, cyanide turned out to be the direct killer. And cyanide, for those of you who don't know what it does, it's this really fast-acting toxin. It prevents the body's cells from using oxygen, so that then leads to really rapid organ failure. Then tetrahydrozoline, that's the eye drop chemical that can cause really dangerous drops in blood pressure, respiratory distress, and that can then lead to a coma. So the autopsy officially ruled Angela's death a homicide caused by poisoning. Now, even before those final toxicology results came in, police had launched a homicide investigation on the 15th of March. This is whilst Angela was still on life support. So this had obviously been catalysed by Ryan and Michelle Redfern, who alerted immediately the hospital staff about the package that had been delivered to the dentist office. So as soon as the attending ICU nurse heard this, she notified the police. So that evening, detectives from the Aurora Police Department's Major Crimes Homicide Unit arrive at the hospital to gather the information, and they are met by a bizarre scene. Craig sobbing away as the doctors told him that Angela's prognosis was dire. Oh, how terrible it is. How awful. What could possibly have happened to my beautiful, devoted wife? You can just see the scene, can't you? Now, Ryan and Michelle Redfern, they're good human beings. They are moral human beings. They voluntarily immediately provided statements in the early hours of the 16th of March. And they are able to add emphasis to the reasoning behind why she might have been murdered. So they recount events that had led up to her death, such as Craig's financial troubles and marital problems, and also the office manager's discovery of that very incriminating cyanide package. Next, the detectives go to speak with the amazing Caitlin Romero and recount how Craig's behaviour on the 6th of March had raised those suspicions for her. Then she described the FedEx package being delivered on the 13th of March, the fact that it contained cyanide. And she did admit to the police, yeah, I did hand it over to Craig and I didn't make a scene over it because I didn't really know why he wanted it. I didn't want to cause any problems, but she realised the significance when Angela's illness worsened. Now, she also told the police that Craig told her and other staff members in early March that he had asked Angela for a divorce. So at that point, he was apparently painting Angela as this emotionally unstable person and that she wasn't taking this news well. Let's just think about that for a moment. So Craig is suggesting that Angela is not an emotionally balanced person and she's not taking the idea of a divorce well. Craig, I'm just going to throw it out there. Weren't you the person who had financially ruined your family, who had spent lots of money gambling, who'd had countless extramarital affairs, and who tried to drug your wife because apparently you're going to take your own life but didn't want her to find you or stop you? Gosh, yes. When it comes down to who is unstable in this relationship, is it the devoted mother who works tirelessly and relentlessly to keep her relationship together and just toes the absolute straight and narrow line, or is it you, the fundamental disaster with psychopathic traits? I will leave that for you to decide, Craig. Anyway, that's what he's doing. He's blaming her. So this is essentially a manipulation technique. He's basically planting seeds to claim down the line that Angela might have decided that she wanted to harm herself because she was so devastated by the fact that he was gonna leave her, essentially. Now, the police waste no time. They get the search warrants quickly. So on the 16th and 17th of March, Aurora police execute searches of the Craig family home and also his dental office because he sees his computers, his tablets, his phone, because clearly, if he's innocent, there's not gonna be any incriminating searches or orders on those particular devices, are there? Also, collected Angela's red protein shake bottle, which was sitting on her nightstand, and the contents were at that point half finished. And from the kitchen, they collect several OTC medication bottles. These include multiple empty Visine eye drop bottles. I mean, somebody must have had a lot of eye problems in that house for there to be multiple empty bottles of them. Now, the digital forensics team, they end up combing through Craig's email accounts and internet search history, and they hit the jackpot on his office computer because it reveals he'd used a hidden profile to search for poisons and to access the dark web. I'm sure that you know what the dark web is, but basically, if you imagine Google, etc., being 5% of the web, then you've got the dark web, which is the rest of it, where all the most horrendous things play out, from people trafficking to drug selling to gun selling. It's just the worst of the worst. And don't get me started on what they believe the deep dark web is, which is even worse than the dark web. But he's obviously downloaded something like Torrent to be able to get in there, and from there has been able to access the dark arts of what you can do to create the end of people's lives. And it turns out that it was February the 27th that Craig uses that computer to covertly order a rush shipment of arsenic online, also researched arsenic's lethal dosage, detectability, and other things that could prevent him from being incriminated but successfully lead to a murder. So he Googled, how many grams of pure arsenic will kill a human? Is arsenic detectable in autopsy? How long does it take to die from arsenic poisoning? So deeply incriminating. And records show that Craig purchased a 10 gram of arsenic metal, that's 99.99999% purity, from an online vendor paying $13. This was apparently for the so-called element collection sample, so obviously he's tried to give an excuse as to why he wants it. That package was ordered through Amazon. It was delivered to Craig's home mailbox on the 4th of March 2023. This is just one day before Angela returned home from Utah. He also watched videos comparing different poisons. He actually noted from one video in his browser history that it listed pros and cons of toxins, e.g. cyanide, 1.5 milligrams per kilogram is a fatal dose. So he's absolutely exhaustively searching for the best manner of how to murder his wife. It doesn't take long for his arrest. 19th of March 2023, it's the day after her death. Craig's formally charged with first-degree murder in Arapahoe County, Colorado. He was actually arrested in the early hours before dawn.
All right, Bob, you are under arrest.
Okay.
Okay, first-degree murder.
So Jim's under arrest.
Now, on the 20th of March, he has his initial court appearance in which a judge held him correctly without bond. Who wants this kind of individual walking our streets? Not me, thank you very much. Now, a few months later, this is at a June 2023 bond hearing, another judge set an extraordinarily high bail of $10 million. So that meant he was going to basically have to stay in custody. Now, as the investigations continue, serious as they are, they can't believe it when it ends up that lots of additional charges are going to stack up against Craig. And why? Because even after this man has been arrested for the murder of his wife, he's not stopped scheming because he's decided, I'm going to get away with it. I'm going to get away with it. I'm going to get away with this. I'm going to evade accountability entirely. Because in jail, he tried to orchestrate this elaborate plot to pin the crime on others, or to create basically the illusion that Angela took her own life. He asked one of his adult daughters to produce a deep fake video of Angela to show her purportedly admitting to wanting to be poisoned. Oh yeah, just, you know, call your daughter. Hi, Dad. Why are you calling me? You're in prison because you're accused of the murder of my mother. I know. And we could go down that line where I have been accused and then get found guilty of murdering your mother. Or we could get creative. Sorry, Dad, what do you mean? We can get creative. Well, why don't you create a deep fake AI scenario where your mother is basically saying she wants to be poisoned? It's highly illegal and it's not true. I know. All I'm saying is this could work out for me. So if you could just go about creating a deep fake AI video where your mother basically says, I wanted to die of poisoning, that would be really helpful. Are you there? Are you still there? I don't know, they've been cut off. Anyway, literally he did that. Basically, just create and craft this fake scenario where your mum's saying, I want to be poisoned, as if somebody with technological understanding wouldn't have been able to see that that was deepfake. At the end of the day, I know AI is amazing, I get fooled quite a lot, but I'm telling you now, if you're an expert in the field and they would bring an expert in the field to analyse it, it would be seen to be a deepfake. But what does this tell you about the mindset of this man? He doesn't care that he's killed someone. He just wants to get out, get on with his life, probably inherit a huge amount of money from his wife's life insurance and be seen to be the innocent party in something he's completely guilty of. Now, bear in mind, this horrified the family. That later becomes a charge of solicitation to commit tampering with physical evidence and solicitation to commit perjury. And bear in mind, think about the traumatic impact on his daughter. Oh, my dad actually thought that maybe I would do that. You know, what does that say about his inability to have any level of empathy? And what does that say about his incredible narcissistic tendencies? A lot, being that he's a massive narcissist with no empathy. Now, furthermore, whilst he is waiting trial in jail, he befriends a fellow inmate and is basically like, you know what you can do for me when you get out? I just want you to kill Detective Bobby Olson, the lead investigator, as if that would change anything. Could you imagine if that's how it worked? The detective in charge has sadly been killed on this very clear murder case where we've got the person in prison awaiting trial. So we unfortunately have to just drop the case because the lead investigator is dead. So there is literally no point carrying on. No one would be a lead investigator, would they? Nobody would be like, I am not taking that level of responsibility because somebody is going to bump me off. But it shows he has no insight. He's no consequences when it comes down to thinking about what will happen when he's found out, and he has little impulse control, which has led to putting him in this situation in the first place. Now we get to the 29th of August, 2023. At this point, he appears in court for a formal arraignment. What does he plead? Not guilty to all the charges. Forget the fact that he's called his own daughter and said, can we just get you to create this ruse where your mother wanted to die? And that's been forwarded, so clearly he's guilty there. Also, he's tried to solicit somebody in prison to help kill the lead investigator, so that means he's guilty there. Also, there's all that incriminating evidence, so that means he's obviously guilty, and his friends knew about it because the manager of the actual clinic called and said this guy's had access to cyanide, and all of her symptoms clearly evidenced that it was cyanide that killed her, and it was. How are you ever going to get away with that? You're bang to rights, dead to rights in that moment. But yeah, not guilty. Now, the charges he's facing are first-degree murder, 2 counts of solicitation to commit tampering with physical evidence, 2 counts of solicitation to commit first-degree perjury, solicitation to commit first-degree murder and manslaughter. So, some hefty charges there. When it came to the trial, that began on the 15th of July 2025 in the Arapahoe County District Court in Centennial, Colorado. The judge presiding over it was Shay Whitaker. Now, in the opening statements, ADA Ryan Brackley delivered the prosecution's statements. Alleged Craig used his medical access to administer a fatal dose whilst in the hospital with Angela. So literally, as she's in hospital, he's continuing to dose her. Now, the timeline evidence actually shows that Angela became ill after drinking smoothies made by Craig beginning on the 6th of March. Now, we know he had financial troubles, he had multiple affairs, he was pursuing a relationship with Karen Kane, who he's texting after Angela's death, claiming he never drugged her, claiming that he wanted to start a life with her. I mean, if that isn't the romantic scenario you'd expect, isn't it? You know, my wife is deceased. Oh my God, that's terrible. That's awful for you. Even though you were apparently estranged and getting a divorce, it's still awful. Yes, I didn't drug her and kill her. I never said you did. No, I just want to clarify, I didn't. Why are you texting me saying that your wife wasn't murdered by you? Oh, no, I'm just saying, you know, at the end of the day, just to clarify, I didn't do anything untoward towards her. Again, you just wouldn't respond, would you? You'd be like, I'm not going to get in contact with this guy ever again because this guy is clearly telling me something whilst saying he's not telling me something in that text. Now, the prosecution go hard with this line, and rightfully so, and it's very effective and really telling. The defence have to acknowledge that Angela was indeed poisoned. They have to acknowledge that she did die because of that poison. But they say, I kid you not, the prosecution's case is built on assumptions. Just built on assumptions. Yes, your case is just built on assumptions. On assumptions like he's guilty. That's an assumption. Well, we've got evidence to say that he's guilty, such as he bought the actual cyanide. We're saying you're assuming he bought the cyanide. It was literally on his computer, which other people could have had access to. No. Yes, you're assuming that's not possible. We're also saying that he's literally gone ahead and tried to solicit his own daughter to create a deep fake AI video of their mother saying she wanted to die of poison. That's an assumption, it's hearsay. It isn't really though, is it? Because why would she want her father, who's apparently innocent, to get found guilty of the wife's murder that's also her mother? We're saying you're assuming that relationship. We're saying that she might not even be the mother or the daughter. It's all assumption-based. I mean, if you're gonna go down assumption-based, this is ludicrous. But yep, apparently it's assumption, speculation, and tunnel vision. Yes, it is tunnel vision, because he's guilty as hell. The defence also described the Craigs as having a complex but loving marriage. So loving, Mr. Defence Lawyer, that she thought he was drugging her and he was making up reasons why that were the case, which was emotionally manipulative to make her feel bad for the fact that she was concerned he was drugging her. Also, he said that Craig wasn't in financial crisis, even though he clearly was, and suggested that Angela was emotionally vulnerable, possibly manipulative, and deeply committed to maintaining the appearances due to their Mormon faith. So basically translated as a wife who wanted her marriage to work. But let's just victim blame. Also, they went ahead and criticised the investigation for missing key evidence. What evidence was that? Actually, the CCTV of him bloody going ahead and murdering his wife, because that's the only evidence that's missing. Now, the prosecution, well, they weren't having any of it, and correctly so. They brought in Blaine Cullen, who is the resident nurse at Parker Adventist Hospital. She treated Angela when she was admitted in March 2023. At that point, she was suffering from low oxygen levels. And whilst she was working, she said that she received a call from the person monitoring Angela and found her to be really pale and sweaty and non-responsive, and Craig was also in the room. During cross-examination, I will say the defence pointed out that he appeared to be sleeping when Blaine entered the room, and I suppose they're suggesting he looked like he was sleeping. He couldn't possibly have drugged his wife and then pretended to sleep. No, he must have absolutely been sleeping. It's assumption-based that you think maybe he got up and drugged her when he was sleeping. You can just see how they're playing that, can't you? They also bring in Caitlin Romero, who is like the smoking gun in this case, as far as I'm concerned. She was the Summerbrook Dental Group office manager. She saw Craig working on that computer in the exam room hours after in the dark. She wondered why. She knew he was in exam room 9, that he was on a computer used for x-rays, patients' notes and patients' charts, so shouldn't have been there. And on her drive home, Craig texted, of course, to say he'd ordered that personal package. And don't open it. Don't open it. Now that, as we know, arrived on March the 13th, 2023. It had that biohazard marker. The invoice literally indicated it was potassium cyanide, and she'd never seen that delivered to the office before. It didn't make sense. And she said on March the 6th, Craig arrived late to a staff meeting saying that basically Angela, his wife, didn't feel well. And he also said it was after he'd made her a shake. A little bit strange, a little bit too much information there. Why would you even mention the shake? And she said that she recalled him mentioning he might have put too much protein in there. Also, she said that Craig initiated an emotional relationship with her. He was constantly sharing personal issues and struggles with her, which is a little bit breach of boundary in the professional relationship. And then they bring in Dr. Michelle Redfern, who talks about that text where he says, if it wasn't my wife, this would be kind of a fun puzzle to try and work out. And on the evening that Angela was pronounced brain dead, Craig calls her. This is while she and her husband Ryan were in the car. And Ryan at this point has been informed about the potassium cyanide. And he says, what's going on with this potassium cyanide? To which Craig actually responded, oh, Ryan, what have you done? Sorry? Yeah, Ryan, what have you done? Well, I'm just asking you a question about the potassium cyanide that you had brought to the clinic. Oh, Ryan, what have you done? He's basically meaning, oh, basically, you've betrayed me to some degree. Then, he claims, when he's thinking about how do I explain this, he purchased it for Angela because she was suicidal. And the purchase was, quote, a game of chicken between the two of them. Now, we all know what a game of chicken is. A bit like Russian roulette. So, what are they going to be doing? Just deciding who's going to have a bite first and make a decision whether it's actually got the cyanide in or otherwise. It makes no sense whatsoever. They also bring into court Oleg Gamzalev. Now, he is King Super's asset protection specialist. So he testifies to the court that basically he looked into records tying 2 credit cards in the name of James T. Craig to him. The records show that on March the 8th, there was a purchase of 12 packages of eye drops. Also, on March the 9th, there was a purchase for 7 packages of eye drops. Again, no one needs that many eye drops. It's as simple as that. They also bring in a cell support specialist with Midland Scientific called Cassie Rodriguez. They testify to a web order of potassium cyanide placed by James Craig using the email jim@gmail.com, said that the orders placed with Gmail addresses typically raise red flags. So they said that the buyer wanted to basically pick the chemical up in person, but their facility didn't allow it. And they then said that this person then asked whether the order can be shipped at night, not incriminating whatsoever. They basically said there was a type of seminar that he was presenting, and therefore that's why he needed it shipped at night. Game. Deeply incriminating. Who would think that having something shipped at night or picking something up in person wouldn't have some kind of suspicious overtones to it? They bring in CSI Darvin Harrell, and he walks the jury through photos of the Craig home. These include pictures of the protein drink shaker bottles, freshly run through the dishwasher, also a bottle of clindamycin. So lots of incriminating evidence there. And the prosecutors insinuate that Craig had filled the capsules in the bottle with poison. And a closer view of the bottle shows it was actually prescribed by Dr. Craig DDS. So he's even prescribing this medication. The prosecution also bring in the eldest child of Craig. Now, their identity has been withheld at the request of the trial judge, and rightfully so, they've got some anonymity. Now, they said that Angela literally loved being a mum. She loved exercising. She loved being around animals. They said, listen, was your mum depressed? And she said, no. We were making plans to fix up a house together someday. Angela told her daughter that she started to feel dizzy, that she started to feel nauseous before she died. She also said that she noticed her mum was a lot less stable on her feet. And she actually asked her father to do an autopsy on her mother to find out what was wrong. But he said, quote, he didn't want to satisfy their curiosities. If they couldn't figure it out when she was alive, then they shouldn't poke around when she's gone. I swear to God, that's literally what he said. Why would we want to know why your mother died? Why would you want to know? Is it because you're curious? I am actually just really curious about why my mother died, because she's 43 and shouldn't have died. Yes, but we're not going to satisfy your curiosity. We're going to leave it to the experts, who hopefully won't find out that I poisoned and murdered her. Literally, What kind of a human being are we describing where this man is concerned? Now, the third oldest child of the couple, who was living at home at the time of her mother's death, she said, listen, protein shakes were really common in the home for everyone but the youngest children. And she also validated, Angela did not appear depressed. She was frequently speaking about the future. She also told the court that after her father was arrested, she got this call off him to basically say, could she bail out another inmate? And in that call, he said, it was basically best if she didn't tell anyone about this, but the inmate would have, quote, important information for her, said the inmate was her cousin, Jonathan. And she's like, oh, that's really strange, because I don't know any cousin called Jonathan. So she drove to bail the cousin from jail. He then hands her pieces of printer paper with writing on them that were taped together. And that letter was in her father's handwriting, asking her to create a deep fake video of Angela saying she asked Craig to order the chemicals. And the letter really hammered home and stressed the importance of the metadata for the deep fake to show it was created on February the 27th, told her to call it, quote, the Memories Project, and laid out code words to use to discuss it. Can you believe that he thought his daughter was going to get embroiled in this? That she'd be a co-conspirator? That she'd help to cover up the murder of her mother? Now, the Aurora police detective, Molly Harris, is brought into court by the prosecution. She examined the Google records associated with Craig's email and Google voice number. The account, it turns out, was created on February the 27th, 2023, and the records show arsenic metal was purchased and shipped the next day. On the browser of the hard drive collected from exam room 9 at Craig's dental practice, the history showed, quote, a search for how many grams of pure arsenic will kill a human. I mean, again, is this just assumption, Mr. Defence Lawyer? I think not. Now, of course, the defence say yes, but we don't know who was using the computer at the time. Well, I think it's probably the person who poisoned his wife. Just going to throw it out there. Other searches were performed from exam room 9 on February the 27th and 28th, as well as March the 1st and 6th. Now, he even asked, is there such a thing as an undetectable poison? How to make poison from Olanda? Is arsenic detectable? How to make murder look like a heart attack? A dose of tetrahydrazoline is fatal? How long does it take to die from arsenic poisoning? Visine, tetrahydrazoline poisoning timeline. So all of these are searches he's done independently. Now, there were no searches on Angela's phone for poison, self-harm or depression, unsurprisingly. Also, searches before March the 6th on Angela's browser were also benign. And after March the 6th, however, there was a change. So she was searching, why too much vitamin B? Pre-workout supplement made me dizzy and eyes are blurry an hour later. Side effects of high blood pressure, dizziness, slow focus, tired, head pressure, hearing distortion. Mini seizures, can the flu cause vertigo? Nutrition label for carnation high protein. Is there an app for monitoring vital stats I can share with loved ones? So you can see she is searching for things that are contextual with her physical feelings. She's not searching about, I want to poison myself. I want to play a game of chicken with my husband where poison's concerned. No, she's looking for the actual reality of what she's enduring, which is these horrible physical symptoms. Now, the texts are shown to the jury, which basically very much alert them to the fact there were problems in Angela and Craig's relationship. Angela was actually saved in his phone as mom. Craig was saved in hers as the boy. So that shows a very different relationship, doesn't it? That she's still seeing him as a lover and he's kind of putting her in the maternal role. Now, on December the 9th, 2022, Angela actually texted him, don't come home, I don't want you here. I was there, you know, I was finally in the place where I could feel that maybe all of this was worth it. Then last night was bad and I told you it was bad and you were just gonna go on your day with her. You know why you did this, you can't fix this. There's nothing left for you to break. We'll do what we need to do to get through Christmas with the kids. Craig told her, you're not worth it. And he said he used another woman to build his own ego up. Just classic victim blaming, classic gaslighting. It's beyond unfair to do that to this woman who's devastated about the end of a marriage. Now, Angela's friend, Nicole Harmon, she came into court and she recalled an incident on the 9th of March, 2023. This is when Angela came over and said, can you test my blood sugar? She didn't tell her why she needed that test. So when Nicole arrived at the house, she actually found Angela on the sofa not looking well. She saw a protein shake next to the couch Angela said her husband had made for her. And she testified that the Craigs actually visited her home in 2019. And during that visit, Craig had said he'd been dealing with sexual addiction and apparently he was planning to inject himself with something to kill himself, and he drugged Angie to make sure she didn't wake up and stop him. So clearly, He's doing that because he's been found out by Angela and he's just trying to speak to a friend of theirs to make it seem more legitimate. And only Craig actually mentioned this. Angela didn't say a thing. She was probably absolutely humiliated and terrified in equal measure. Now, when they bring Dr. Carla Walker, the toxicology expert, into court, she testifies that Angela had nearly twice the lethal amount of cyanide in her system. So she had 5.865 milligrams of cyanide in her blood. And in a non-smoker, she would expect to see the levels of 0.025 milligrams and 0.2 milligrams if somebody was exposed to toxins for their job. The toxic levels of cyanide are reached when the range is 1 to 2.5 mil. The death occurs over 3 milligrams. They also bring in Dr. Karen Kane, Craig's mistress. Now, she talks about the fact they met in Vegas in February 2023, said that she was told they were getting divorced, they were nearing the end of the divorce. She said he was just this amazing father, the way he talked with them and handled their emotions. It was the same way he dealt with me. He had this incredible gift of making people feel so understood. She said that his attraction and her attraction felt right. She said he was so honest and vulnerable. No, he's just a massive manipulator. But obviously, he's effective at doing that. She said in Vegas, she and Craig shared a ride to the airport, had a goodbye kiss, and that's when she flies back home. But it kind of solidifies their relationship. She came to Denver to literally meet with him in March 2023. Then the day she left, that's the 19th of March, she met with Bobby Olson. The prosecution also bring in Jennifer Herriman. That's an employee at the Arapahoe County Detention Facility. And they testify in April 2024, she opens a letter returned to Craig with suspicious contents in it. The letter basically offered free dental care and money for getting people to be witnesses in his case. I kid you not. Hey! Do you want a free brace? Do you want some veneers? Do you want some implants? Well, I got this deal of a lifetime for you. All you need to do is lie in court to get me out, and I will give you really good teeth for the rest of your natural life. Well, that's unless I'm having lots of extra affairs and also gambling all my money away and causing my practice to close. But aside from that, you'll absolutely be able to have the best teeth from here to anywhere in the world. So this basically is a call out for witnesses, and it included advice for avoiding detection, like burner phones, and a letter within the letter literally contained a description of roles for attractive women to play as witnesses. Featured code words like Harry Potter and Captain America to be the recipient. Not weird at all. These are all assumptions, I'm sure the defense is saying. It's just assumptions. The prosecution also bring in former cellmate Casey Bohannon. And this cellmate said that Craig had asked him to place a fake journal allegedly belonging to Angela inside the home. So when he's out, go to the home, place his fake journal there. And at first he tells him that the reason that Angela died was by suicide. And this cellmate's like, okay, why are you in prison? So he questions him about it and he says, why did she use cyanide? And obviously he doesn't have a good explanation for this. Craig then went ahead and drew a map of his home with the layout of where the cameras might be. But this was later destroyed because his cellmate didn't want to be part of Craig's scheme. And he said, I just had this feeling, almost like sick. Like, I knew something wasn't right. I knew that what he was telling me and what I felt just was suggesting I needed to reach out to the authorities and tell someone. Then a former cellmate, Nathaniel Harris, said in November 2024, Craig told him he was in custody for allegedly murdering his wife, while actually he'd helped her commit suicide. So Harris then said that he told Craig how his ex-wife had also fabricated documents and photos in a past case. So Craig ends up giving Harris a letter, which is apparently intended to be mailed to his ex-wife. So obviously he's running with this idea, well, this woman knows how to create fake documents. I'm going to run with this. But unfortunately for him, on the 10th of November 2024, Sergeant Nicholas Hudson searches Craig's cell, finds an 11-page handwritten letter that Craig intended Nathaniel Harris to send to his ex-wife, who'd experienced in creating these fake documents. And he writes, hey, Cassie, I know you don't know me, and I don't know you. I would never normally be this trusting, but I have been unjustly accused of a truly horrible crime, thus fighting fire with fire to clear my name and return me to my kids. I'd like to offer $20,000 to each witness. I'd like for you to be one of the witnesses. I think now is a good time to share with you several details about my wife, Angela. And the letter then provided a phone number, date of birth, address, and a Facebook for the couple's joint account. And he said, role one, this is for you. You are a friend of Angie's now. How you met and how far back your friendship goes is up to you. You knew because Ange confided in you about the threat of suicide. The next part is crucial. The worst, dirtiest detective in the world is on my case. Her name is Bobbie Olsen. We have to discredit her. I need you to say that after Ange died, you reached out to APD to share the above details. You told her the whole story. When you finished, Detective Olsen berated you, said she didn't believe you, accused you of lying, and told you to keep quiet. Obviously, you need to refuse to communicate with Olsen. If no one will listen to you, you need to go to the media. Rule two, for your sister, I hope. Also, go to the DA. Your sister used to visit the family history library. Ange volunteered her. Often, there was nobody there except your sister and Ange, so they became casual friends. If you're worried about the DA linking you and your sister, you can use a fake name. Make sure Harvey can contact you both after your statements make it into discovery, because I'm sure the DA is not going to call you as a witness. Harvey will need to call you as defence witnesses. Rule three. Someone who can say they were either there with your sister at the family library, or even better, if the third witness can corroborate your story, if your sister feels comfortable incorporating more of the details from your own into her story, the better. Rule four. Go to Harvey about this, not the DA. This person is either a friend of or somehow somebody who's overheard Caitlin Romero, my former office manager. She's about 25 years old, plump, pretty face. Caitlin was recently heard bragging that she'd been subpoenaed. It sounds like she fabricated evidence or testimony, something about the search history at work. Also, something about how she ordered the cyanide that killed Ange. Caitlin said she did what she did because her bosses pushed her to do it. Said they gave her a huge financial incentive to help them. I mean, this is just ludicrous, isn't it? But like I said, this is what is going on constantly. He's just trying to literally get away with murder. And effectively, he believes that he can do that. It is shocking that this man is so delusional and so dangerous in equal measure. Now, when the prosecution bring in Detective Bobbie Olsen, they talk about the fact that they've actually received a letter from someone alleging that Angela paid someone $66,000 to frame Craig for her murder. So that's obviously a ruse, trying to suggest that Angela wanted to die and wanted to frame him because, I don't know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. But this detective also did touch on the couple's life insurance policies, which included one from Kansas City Life and Lincoln Life combined together. They were worth $4 million. That was a big pay packet coming for him. They also were able to present surveillance footage from the home. So detectives literally viewed over 1,000 hours. The video from early hours of the 6th of March, 2023 literally shows Craig microwaving and mixing something. So it was called in most attention to a cup with a pink lid on the counter. And in a series of texts, Angela's accusing Craig of telling people she had suicidal ideations. And phone data even showed Craig was going from his dental office to Midland Scientific to pick up an order for cyanide. And a note from Craig said, hopefully this is in stock and I can pick it up on March 9th. So very incriminating. Another video showed him handling a shaker bottle and a white cup in the kitchen around 5 a.m. And around an hour later, Craig brings that bottle to Angela, who's sitting on the couch. Olsen also testified about an email that Craig had sent about an order of Olandrin. It's a drug which is used in folk medicine, but the National Institute of Health warns it can actually be fatal. So he's really gone for it, where he's tried his best to procure as many poisons as possible. And all the while is blaming her for taking her own life and now blaming her for trying to actually frame him. They also bring into court this bizarre four-page iPhone note written on the 16th of March at 1:03 a.m. And it's apparently a first-person statement Craig presents to the investigators about apparently what happened to Angela. So the note references him opening a Seeking.com account and asking Angela for a divorce. Angela responded by saying, I'm just going to end my life. Now, according to the note, she started talking about poison. She's asking Craig to research ones that would kill her. And he says, at this point, I had a change of heart. I was not trying to back her out of it. And so I bought a bunch of eye drops and arsenic online. I told her there was no way I was going to administer these to her. This was her idea. All I would do is prepare the dosing so she could choose what to do next. so bizarre, but he's running with us. I told her our next conversations needed to be loving and sweet, and we had to put on a show in public that we were a happy, loving couple, and she agreed. 2 Mondays ago, she tried the eye drops. That was our first ER visit. I must have not calculated the dosage correctly, or she didn't use all the eye drops. A couple of days later, she decided to try arsenic, as you would. You'd be like, oh, those eye drops didn't kill me. Had a bit of an awful experience. Let's go further. Let's try the arsenic. So she told me to put it in the protein shake in the morning so she wouldn't taste it, and she chugged it down. I didn't want to tell the physicians what she'd taken because she wasn't telling them what she had taken either. No, she wasn't, was she, Craig? Because she didn't know she'd taken it. In the hospital, she asked me to research what the fastest acting poisons were and what the maximum dosage was. I figured it was potassium chloride, but that would hurt a lot going into the IV, or it would be cyanide. She said she wanted to try cyanide next, but read somewhere it tasted awful. She told me she intended to drink eye drops again and then do the cyanide. She asked me to put it into a capsule. The note reads, I got her a clindamycin prescription and filled it with 200 milligrams each of potassium cyanide. She asked me to do something like a dozen capsules. The note then went on to say that he reserved 4 capsules that were not tainted and used those as her first 2 doses. Now, bear in mind, in this note, he also admits that he prepared a syringe with cyanide, details his time in the ER. He actually said in the ER, it looked like she was probably going to pull through and be okay. He said, in that moment, when no one else was in earshot, she asked me to help finish the job. It is shocking, isn't it, that this man has gone out of his way to victim blame so relentlessly and to actually blame her for causing her own demise and now blame her for trying to blame him for that demise. When the prosecution rested its case, it had called nearly 50 witnesses. I've only been through a few because otherwise you'd be here for 3 weeks. The defence rested its case without calling any witnesses because nobody wanted to be a witness for him. It's as simple as that. It's obviously outstandingly clear that he was the murderer. The deliberations for the verdict began on the 29th of July, 2025. At 2 p.m. on the 30th of July, 2025, the jury returned and Craig was found guilty on all counts. Of course he was.
We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of murder in the first degree. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit tampering with physical evidence. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit perjury in the first degree. We, the jury, unanimously and beyond a reasonable doubt, find the defendant, James Craig, guilty of solicitation to commit murder in the first degree.
Then the victim impact statements began whilst the sentencing phase began immediately. The judge did allow the victim impact statements before delivering the sentence, and it was Angela's eldest child, Mira, who spoke directly to her father. She described the deep betrayal that she felt. She said, I was supposed to be able to trust my dad. He was supposed to be my hero. And instead, he'll forever be the villain in my book. Angela's 20-year-old son, Tolliver, also spoke, said he loved his mum deeply. He said about 2 weeks after Angela died, he set a daily alarm on his phone for 10 p.m. labelled Mum. It goes off every night to remind him of her. He said, I'm sad there's not more time with her. Also, Catherine Prey, Angela's sister, she told the court how disgusted she was when she realised how giddy Craig seemed in the family group text as he was relaying Angela's worsening condition. She said at the time they just put it down to nerves, but in hindsight he'd been torturing her and all the family were filled and unable to help. She said, Craig is a pretender and a liar. He's a snake in the grass. Through all these statements, of course, he was quiet. When Judge Whittaker asked if he wanted to speak, he declined, just as we'd expect for a guilty coward. He had nothing to say to his own children or even to Angela's wider family. When it came down to the sentencing in this case, Judge Whittaker did not hold back. They said that nobody in the courtroom would ever be the same again after this case, that Dr. Craig unleashed a path of destruction on his wife, just like a tornado and just as devastating. The damage to his children, damage to Angela's family, damage to his own family. And they urged that everybody come together to support the Craig children in years to come because they are the massive victims in this case. It's unbelievable for them. They've lost their mother and father. At the end, the decision was made to sentence Craig to life in prison without parole plus an additional 32 years. So he ain't never gonna breathe freely again, and rightfully so. Now, in the aftermath of this, a GoFundMe has been set up to raise funds for Craig's children and for their immediate and future financial support. So far, it had raised over $70,000, which just speaks of how wonderful you people are, because people like you make a difference in these cases. Yes, you can't bring back the parent that's been lost, but you can provide some financial stability for those who remain. James Craig reminds me of the worst in humanity. He really does. Because if you can't trust the person you share your life with, who can you trust? If you can't trust your medical professional, who can you trust? And yet here we are in a situation that explains we can't trust these people very often. He tried to construct a narrative where he was going to be free. And whilst it's delusional to imagine he ever believed his lies would stick, he did. He did believe they would stick. Like I said, it's perfectly possible for a psychopathic maniac to remain dormant for many years. The cracks appeared, the gambling, the extramarital affairs, the financial instability, the risk-taking. But for the most part, they can act a certain way to fill a certain role until it's too late. And the mask slips and a victim arrives. Poor Angela. What was she guilty of? Guilty of being a devoted, loving, committed wife. And for that, she paid the ultimate price with her life.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.